Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to the show. Today is Monday, January 19th. It's also Martin Luther King Day. But we're here doing a show, keeping you entertained. God forbid we'll keep you here without a show one morning. Hi, Jen.
Hi.
Are you with me this morning or are you still busy reading?
I am so interested in what's going on in the news.
Really? What did you find there?
Reading about the Instagram photo of the Miss Universe contestants.
Yeah.
I mean...
Do you believe that? It's disgusting, man. I put a post on it on Facebook where a few of the contestants took a picture.
Yeah.
And the Lebanese girl wasn't happy that the Israeli girl was in the picture.
Well, I think originally she probably was, but then saw all the backlash and was like, no, she just jumped into our picture.
Was there a backlash before she said anything?
Yes.
Like from the Arab world or something?
Yeah, there were a lot of comments about it. And then she reposted it, cutting out Miss Israel.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
But the whole point of it is that, A, it's Miss Universe pageant. All of the countries are represented. And that's the point, right, is that they can all come together. It's a friendly competition. You know, it's about who is, you know, the most beautiful Miss Universe person.
Right.
I don't know.
Right.
I mean, it's
with the greatest personality, right?
Right. I mean, it's kind of silly when you think about it.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
But they're just women, you know, taking a picture together. They are not fighting their country's battles, I don't think. They're saying they, you know, work for this charity or they do that with their spare time and they, you know, wear this bikini or this gown. So to say that they represent their country's fight, I don't know.
Right.
Is the point of the pageant.
Right.
Otherwise, they'd be at the UN or they'd be on the front lines. I don't know that they'd be in a pageant right now.
Right. And, you know, I mean, to cause such commotion and it's, you know, this is not the first time this has happened. I mean, it's happened in the Olympics. It happened in a lot of different occasions where the Arabs will pull out. The thing is that I'll tell you why that is, Jen, because they hate Jews simply because they're Jews. And that's the conclusion that people have arrived at. It's because there's no other reason for that hatred, you know? I mean, this girl doesn't even know what the hell's going on, probably, politically. And yet, you know, she makes a statement, you know, against Israel, against everything that the competition stands for, like you said.
Right.
You know, it's a universal thing. It's a global thing.
I mean, I do think that they come from, you know, countries with a lot going on and probably a lot of fear behind whatever it is that they do.
Mm-hmm.
So she probably has to say certain things.
Yeah.
Otherwise, there could be repercussions when she gets back.
Right.
Who knows what she actually has to face. But at the same time, that just goes to show you how ridiculous things are.
Right. Yeah. And what kind of a personality or values does she have? You know, I mean, to win a contest like this when she's like being, you know, whatever you want to call it. Not necessarily racist, but hateful or whatever, you know?
I think she's probably scared more than anything. We don't know what she's facing.
Yeah.
But it is, again, so ridiculous that they even have to worry about posting a picture together because that means so much more for the countries.
Right.
That these two girls could quite possibly get along and take one photo together
while
they are, you know, at the same pageant. Had they not wanted them to be at the same pageant together, which, again, so ridiculous, maybe they shouldn't have sent a contestant.
Right, in the first place. Exactly,
right.
Yeah.
Because the universe includes both countries. Sorry.
Right. Yeah, well, some people don't see it that way,
right,
unfortunately. So, yeah, so that's the news about that one. We're going to get to our guest in a few minutes. We have a special guest in the studio, and we're just going to cover a couple of things. I told you my parents have arrived here from Israel.
What did you guys do over the weekend?
You know, it's just a lot of fun to have them. I mean, you know, they're older, so they're not up to, like, walking long distances and stuff, you know. So we take them out to eat. you know, sit somewhere, whatever. We even walked around the mall a little bit, but otherwise, yeah, it's just been fun just to have them, you know. I mean, there's nothing like family, I'm telling you, you know, and you don't realize it until they're here again, and then you realize, wow, you know,
yeah,
I'm really missing out on a lot. So we're trying to make them see that and talk them into moving here, you know. Because that would be so much greater. I mean, my dad has Parkinson's, and he's really losing his faculties,
mm-hmm.
you know. I mean, his motor skills are, you know, I mean, what it does is that it really, like, hardens your muscles, and they're not as flexible anymore, so he can't move, and he starts shaking and stuff.
Right, and he needs help, I'm sure, and your mother probably can't help him completely the way that she
because she's got a back pain, she's got osteoporosis or whatever. So you see, you get older, not everybody gets sick, but many people do, and you know, the diseases that are associated with aging, and it's hard to look at, let me tell you, you know.
Sure.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, to watch my dad eat now is you know, it's depressing. What can I tell you?
Yeah.
You know, and you know it's only going to get worse by the weeks, not even months, you know, because you can see deterioration and stuff, you know. So that sucks. And then we'll see. I want to get some... try and get some medical cannabis for my mom and see how that works.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Because, for her pain. Because you know what the irony is? Is that when you read about marijuana and medical marijuana, you find that in Israel they've got like the most advanced research on this stuff. And yet it's the hardest place in the world to get it.
Really? Why?
Yeah. They make you go through hoops just to get it. And, I mean, you have to have like a... you know, obviously a doctor, but here you can go to a doctor 5 minutes. You tell him you've got insomnia, whatever. you know, for $60, you get a recommendation for a year. But there, my God, you know, I mean, and this is someone that obviously is not trying to get high here. I mean, she just wants to feel good. So there are strains that are low on psychoactive part of it, so it doesn't get you high. Or not as high, but it's got CBD, which is like the medical, the therapeutic part of it. So,
and is that better than like a muscle relaxer or like?
I don't know, you know. But they say that for back pain, I was reading that they did a study that 89% of people that had back pain and took cannabis reported some kind of an improvement. Mm. You know, so. Go figure. You know, I'll report here. I'll come back and and tell you what's going on. But the nice thing is you don't have to have them smoking in a joint. You know, I mean, they've got like sprays and capsules and things like that. You know, so a more elegant way of consuming it. You know, I mean, even like vaporizing and stuff like with a vape pen or something is better than just smoking it. You know, I mean, there's kids around and stuff like that. You know, you don't want to just stink the whole place just for some pain relief, you know.
Right. So, well, hopefully that helps your mom.
Yeah, I know. I know. And I know firsthand that it's effective in many ways. So, you know, hopefully I can get high with her together.
That would be fun.
Yeah. But no, I'm convinced we can get find something where it won't get her high. But it wouldn't hurt if she got a little buzz, you know. I mean, because it does relax you quite a bit.
Why not? And she's on vacation.
And believe me, I mean, she's been on OxyContin and stuff. You know, that's not good. You know, I mean, it's got side effects and stuff. And that one makes you high, too.
Right.
You know, so.
And addicted. Doesn't that make you addicted?
It does make you addicted, yeah. I don't think that she is. I mean, I don't see her, like, popping pills or anything or looking like she's high or anything, you know.
Yeah.
So, but, yeah, they give her a lot of strong stuff. So I don't know what's going on, man. But that sucks. Just final thing before we get to the guest. A man dies in Taiwan after a 3-day online gaming binge.
Yeah.
He was doing a computer game in an internet cafe.
Yep.
For 3 straight days, 32-year-old man was found dead after a marathon 3-day gambling binge. And, I mean, they're saying, you know, he had a cardiac arrest.
Yep.
Can you imagine?
No. I mean, I actually sent that article to my best friend's boyfriend because he plays video games. Really? He doesn't do it like obsessively like that, but yeah, he plays crazy. Them. So I sent it to him. I was like, see,
yeah,
this can happen to you. He's like, mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah. You know, I mean, the thing is, I know I've played computer games and there's a lot of adrenaline going on. So if he was doing this like nonstop and stuff, I'm not surprised his heart gave in, you know.
But how weak was his heart? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know, man. But, you know, I mean, if you're like at the edge of your seat for 4 hours on end.
Right. I mean, I feel like I would have a headache. I'd go blind. I'd probably like just fall asleep at some point. I don't know.
Yeah, well, they're addicted to this stuff. Yeah. You know? And obviously, I mean, that's very unusual. But actually, they're saying earlier this year, another man was found dead after playing online for 5 consecutive days.
Well, 5 days?
Yeah.
Somebody needs to get a life.
Yeah, somebody does.
I guess too soon to say that, but sorry.
I know.
Don't play video games for, first of all, that's a lot of time.
Yeah.
Get a job.
I know. And finally, I guess we know who's going to play in the Super Bowl. Do you care?
I do.
Okay.
Only a little, because I think it makes the game more interesting, and I'm going to watch the game. So.
Yeah, you like any of the teams?
I like Seattle, the Patriots a lot. Patriots? Just, I grew up with half the family is from Boston.
Oh, okay.
My grandfather
was... So it gives you some kind of connection to...
Yeah,
to
my grandfather was a dentist, not to the Patriots, but to the Celtics and the Red Sox.
Okay.
So our family was very... like staunch
into sports
fans
and stuff,
and so yeah, I'm kind of excited about it.
Cool. With all the cool commercials, the always cool commercials,
it's so much fun, and I really love day drinking, so sign me up for the Super Bowl.
There you go, two drunk girls, man.
Exactly,
you're an expert on this
right
stuff.
Like I don't actually care what the occasion is. I'm like, oh, people are drinking that day, so I can drink and it's acceptable.
Yeah,
cool. Sign
That's cool. Mm-hmm. Why don't you plug your show again, The Two Drunk Girls,
well,
so people will know about it.
Yeah, guys, check out our website is twodrunkgirls.net. And also on YouTube, it's Two Drunk Girls TV. And the word two is written out, T-W-O. We actually have another episode coming up on Thursday. And we discuss racism and sexism at the Oscars.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool. And we touched on it a little bit here.
See what we think about that.
Okay. I'm eager to listen, you know, because that's a sensitive subject.
It is. And of course, we don't.
And you're taking it on.
Drinking. Oh, yeah.
Good.
And I'm sure you can guess how we feel about it.
Great. And Katy Perry is going to sing in the halftime thing. Yep. So that should be cool.
Oh, Katy Perry was a great topic in the interview.
Which one? The movie.
Yeah.
Oh, so you were just saying you've been to the interview.
Yeah.
I mean, you went to see
it. I watched it. Well, we had a screener.
Oh, you've watched it. Okay.
But
how was it?
I have to say, it was so funny. Like, if you like movies like Pineapple Express and Superbad and This is the End and those absurd...
Seth Rogen movies.
Right. If you like movies that are absurd and funny and a good time and you just laugh and you don't take it too seriously, you're going to like the interview.
Okay.
And why it became an international crisis, I have no idea, because it is so absurd. They make fun of everybody, not just North Korea and, you know, the supreme leader over there. They make fun of every person and everything.
Yeah.
And gay, straight, black, white, purple, different, anybody.
They offend everybody.
Everybody and each other. And it's so funny.
Okay.
It's just funny.
No,
it's a good
time.
Eager
to see it. Yeah. Yeah.
It's lighthearted, funny. I mean, come on. Again, how I feel about that. Come on.
Come on, go see it.
Yeah.
You get to see all the movies. I'm really jealous.
Sorry.
Okay. All right, well, let's get to our guest now who's sitting here patiently. We have Mr. Devin Saliani in the studio. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thanks for having me on.
Of course. You were responding a little bit to what we were saying before. What was it you felt strongly about? But the things we talked about.
You know, I was listening to you talk about CBDs, how they work, as opposed to THC.
Right.
And I think one of the sad side effects of the war on drugs is how they've marginalized pot smokers.
Right.
When this is so medicinal for so many people who could really benefit from it. And I think we're in a special time right now that so many people are starting to open their mind to it, as we see Colorado and Washington and other states
right.
Open up to this idea that you're not a lazy pot smoker.
Right.
If you use cannabis.
Or a criminal or an outcast.
It helps a lot of people function better.
Right.
Right.
Some people are saying I'm better high or I'm better on weed than I'm when I'm not.
Right.
You know.
I have a former boss that would like smoke and get on a conference call. And he was just way more focused, way more calm, could like express himself more clearly, could handle it better. I think doesn't it help with like anxiety too? And
it helps a lot of things. Yeah. Some people, it makes them more anxious, but that's the thing, is that you have not everybody
reacts the same way.
Exactly.
Or needs the same
medicine. It affects
people
differently. Exactly.
Well, I think too, it's the sativa blends tend to make people more aware, which can cause anxiety. Mm-hmm. You know, if you went to start drinking and you never drank before, you wouldn't drink an entire bottle of Jack Daniels in a
season. Exactly.
But people will try to eat an entire brownie.
Right. Or, smoke a whole joint, and then they're like, they're overly high.
Right.
And they don't know how to handle it because it's the first time.
Right.
But my uncle,
and I was explaining this to him because he's 60, so he's, learning how to do it again, because in the 70s it was much milder than it is now.
Yes.
But he was recovering from benzo addiction.
What's that?
A benzodiazepine, I believe it is.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Pills.
Right. And that, like you were saying about Oxycontin, I think you hit the nail right on the head. These substances are, if not dangerous, highly addictive.
Right.
Whereas, by comparison, marijuana seems so much safer.
Right.
So.
Yeah. No, I mean, it is. And I mean, are you a user? I mean, because you seem to know about it and stuff.
I know a little bit about it.
Yeah, but people don't come out. I know. I hadn't come out until I started the show. And then I came clean and said, hey, I'm a pothead, I love to smoke. And that's the thing, is that I think there's nothing wrong with recreational use. You know, we don't have to focus only on the medical side of it. I mean, to me, it helps me with a lot of things, but it helps me relax.
Right.
It slows me down. If I'm on the freeway or whatever, driving on the streets, and people just cut in front of me and drive like crazy, I can get upset, But this, it's like I don't even care. I'm like into the music. I'm into the driving.
But does it impair your vision or any of that when driving?
It doesn't impair anything, and especially me. I mean, I've smoked for so many years, and you're talking about it being stronger now. It affects me less now than it did in the 70s, because in the 70s is when I started,
right.
So you smoke for so many years, your brain is not a virgin anymore. You know?
You've
burned a lot of brain cells.
To altered states of perception.
Yeah. I'm still not understanding why, like, it's not allowed, but alcohol is.
Right. Like, because it's been demonized in the 30s. There were attorneys general that were against it. I mean, they made movies about
Reefer Madness.
Yeah, Reefer Madness and stuff to scare people into thinking, oh, it makes women loose and promiscuous and stuff.
I think alcohol does.
Well, and William Randolph Hearst, the publishing magnate.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
He wanted to demonize it as well.
Really?
DuPont didn't want it around because they were afraid that hemp would replace their plastics for rope.
Really?
So there's a whole history of it, of why it became the way that it's been labeled.
Right.
But I think people are starting to see that a lot of that stuff just isn't true. People don't go from smoking a joint to slamming heroin overnight. So
no, I don't think it's a gateway drug at all. They're saying, in fact, that some people who smoke cigarettes start smoking marijuana after that. So they're saying the cigarettes are the gateway drug and not the other way around.
Right.
So I don't know, But the thing is that, I mean, to me, it's like it doesn't even make me high anymore. So that's why it just makes me feel good and relaxed. That's why it doesn't impair anything for me. But I can tell you that if you don't smoke and then you start smoking, you don't want to drive or anything.
No, it puts me to sleep.
Yeah, not in the beginning anyway, And but
you
they
have to
find
really commit for it to work.
Yeah. And I think those stories, that was a perfect segue to the Seth Rogen movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's such an advocate of it. So.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And a lot of people are, and they come out and say it. So like you said, just to summarize everything, it is acceptable. It's becoming much more acceptable. And I think, the genie's out of the bottle.
I think a lot of the hysteria surrounding it is starting to go away, as Colorado has been such a perfect case for people to see. Look, crime went down. They made a windfall of tax money that they're putting into schools.
Right, yeah.
Come on. Like, if people want it, and they're adults,
right?
You know, and they want to use it responsibly for recreation. That, you know, yeah, that's their choice.
So.
You see, that's the
it.
Thing is that it's inevitable that's going to be legal here.
It's sad,
and, you know.
It's sad that California has to be last on this.
Right, exactly.
When we were first, you know.
Right.
Yeah, but we do have the medical marijuana, so it's not hard to get. But the thing is, you want it to be acceptable and so forth. But yeah, the thing is that it's just. It's been demonized, and now it's being more and more accepted. So that's a cool thing. And I'm going to be going to the Cannabis Cup. I think it's early in February. It's the coolest thing. I went last year. They have an outdoor area, dispensaries and stuff, people smoking outside in groups and stuff. I mean, what, you know, what better party? So anyway. So that's that. But no, I mean, I'm saying that. It's inevitable that it's going to become legal here. All I'm saying is, if you can prepare for it, and in a business manner, you could stand to make a lot of money. They're saying it's like the gold rush. You
yeah,
know,
there's
so
a
many
lot of people that
are
trading
starting,
weed
yeah.
stocks, and it's
yeah.
really volatile and technically financially dangerous for people. But a lot of people are getting into it.
Yeah,
and it's not just. The sale of cannabis itself, but also of supplies and vape pens and everything like you were talking
exactly.
about.
Exactly. You know, all
it's
the accessories.
It's going to be a huge market for people to make money in. So.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, enough to talk about weed this morning. We're going to get to Devin's. You're an author.
I am a horror author.
A horror author.
Right.
And not a whore, but a horror,
not a whore.
Author, author. And when did you start writing?
You know, I've always been a writer, and it's funny because one of my earliest ambitions as a kid was to become a novelist.
Really?
Oh. Now I'm 42, so I think it's funny because it seems more like an obsolete career. Back when I was a kid, there were bookstores, and people went to them and read books. And
yeah,
it was a good ambition to have as a kid.
Yeah, and you obviously loved to read as a
yes.
kid. Wow.
Excessive reader. And
I know, me too. And to this day, it doesn't go away, right? I mean,
no,
the love for books,
away.
For reading.
It's why you get into writing is because you start rewriting the stories you're reading in your head. And
that's true. You yeah. get a lot of ideas yourself. Yeah.
But I
Jen
wrote my
started
first short
reading.
Story when I was in fifth grade.
Uh-huh.
And I remember it specifically because I wrote this story about a guy that's trapped on an island.
Uh-huh.
And some kind of monster or something is tracking him, and then it kills him. And that got a parent-teacher conference.
Really?
So. They said, we see a talent and promise in him, and we're also a little concerned
yeah.
about the topics that he's writing about in fifth grade. So.
Wow. So, now, did you grow up reading horror books, too?
I read everything.
You read everything.
I still read everything.
Yeah.
I mean, I read Harry Potter, and I read Clive Barker.
Mm-hmm.
I read Michael Conley. I love detective fiction for some reason.
Really?
Yeah, and I'm obsessed with books.
Yeah.
So I used to be really into literary fiction.
Uh-huh.
I went to UCLA, and so I fancied I was going to be, you know, the American Salman Rushdie or something. And then as time went by, I started realizing what I really want to do is just write stories that people want to read and have fun with it.
Right.
And it was from this mindset that I launched my career as a novelist.
Wow. And when did you consciously decide to launch your career, to say, I'm going to be a professional author?
Well, you know, I gave it a shot about 10, 12 years ago, and I wrote this book, and I wrote it and rewrote it and rewrote it. It was a very cathartic process.
Wow.
And I, you know, now I could easily put it out, and I wouldn't. It's just not very good.
Really?
But what I did is in the process, I began to learn the craft and to really work on it. So I tell people when they come to me, well, how do you deal with rejection? I go, it's good. It's a really good part of the process to learn and to spend time learning your craft and developing your writing style. After that, I wrote a bunch of short stories and began getting them published online, yeah. sending them out to people.
Were they all horror stuff? Or
no, a lot of that was actually is kind of in the same vein as stuff that Chuck Palahniuk was doing. So,
okay, I don't know who he is.
Well, he's the guy that did Fight Club. So,
oh, okay.
Oh, wow.
I think a lot of that stuff is called like transgressive fiction. So you're writing about, you know, sex and drugs and rock and roll and running wild in the streets and
right.
just stuff that's on the edge.
Right.
You know? So as time went by, I got in a situation where a friend of mine I'd written a horror movie with and Lionsgate was supposed to pick it up and he shot it and he needed to do some reshoots and it never happened.
Oh,
and
wow.
it died. And we ended up working together about 3 years ago. I wrote a movie called Humans versus Zombies.
Okay.
And this is based off the live action role playing game that kids play on college campuses.
Oh, really?
He had gotten the rights to do a movie out of it. Uh-huh. And I had this idea I really wanted to do, a zombie idea. A million rewrites later, the thing gets shot, and it's now available through, you know, Walmart, and I believe it's in Redbox. It's on Netflix. It ran on Chiller TV and had a very limited theater release.
Really? So what was it called?
Humans versus Zombies.
Okay. Wow. So, I mean, so you've had an early fascination with zombies, because your latest book or books are called Zombie Attack. The first book is Ride of the Horde, and the second one is Army of the Dead.
Right.
This is fascinating to me. Let me ask you this. Why do you think there's such a fascination with zombies, especially lately, you know, with The Walking Dead and all these movies and everything? What's the fascination? I mean, obviously they don't exist. They're man-made.
Are you sure?
Well, right. I don't know.
There was that guy in Florida that ate that guy's face, so.
Wasn't that bath salt?
Was he a
bath
dead salt. Person?
It's always bath salt. Yeah. No, the idea behind zombies is that they embody our fears. And so if you go back, and there's a tremendous documentary called Doc of the Dead, which has everyone in it, including Bruce Campbell. And they talk a lot about this, where Bela Lugosi was in White Zombie, right? But back then, zombies represented the fear of black men controlling the minds of white women.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
George Romero, who's known to be the father of zombies, he talks about how zombies, for him, represented this fear in society of government and control. But in the 90s, his very popular movie, Day of the Dead, it represented consumerism. I mean, it literally happens in a mall. So it was the fear of us becoming mindless consumers.
Right.
And so when you think of zombies in these terms of how they embody our fears culturally, it makes perfect sense that zombies are so popular right now.
Yeah.
Because at this period of history, we're experiencing this tremendous fear of terrorism, bioterrorism, disease like Ebola, and instability economically and politically. There's a tremendous fear, whether you buy into it or not, being pushed about whether or not our country will survive, or our leadership, or, you know, so people are dealing with these emotions in different ways. And from this springs the popularity of The Walking Dead and what Kirkman did, or World War Z with Max Brooks,
right.
How popular that movie has become. I think it's because it speaks to people about our own fears.
Oh, wow.
So.
See, that's the best answer I ever got.
Yeah.
You know?
And I just thought they were, like, scary and they're gory and kill you.
I didn't used to really be a huge fan of zombies, but I had this idea for that movie, and then after it just grew. And grew inside of me, this idea of really loving zombies. I keep swearing that I'm going to make a hard right turn and move into doing other horror books. I'm just not done. So after I wrote Humans versus Zombies, I found that whole process of being in Hollywood and watching people change your work, and four characters got dropped down into one character, and it felt two-dimensional to me. I didn't appreciate the changes. And I definitely didn't appreciate my work being changed or the lack of control. And so I said, you know, if I'm going to write spec scripts and do all this stuff, and, you know, people don't read those. You live in LA, you know this. Everybody's got 400 screenplays in their backpack that they're ready to give you. The valet guy is like, can you read this on the way up?
Is that why you wrote something about LA?
Yes.
Oh, well, yeah. So, the other book you have on, what's it called? Undead LA,
Undead
right?
LA, yeah.
When did you write this one?
A year and a half ago.
So yeah?
I'm actually working on part 2 and 3 of that series right now. So
really? So when you write, like, the first book, you already know that one book is not going to be enough to tell the story? That's amazing.
It depends. Huh? See, when I wrote Zombie Attack, all these books are different. Zombie Attack is a young adult book. It's like The Walking Dead meets The Hunger Games.
Okay.
So when I wrote this book, it was more like I wanted this idea of something fun. The narrator's 16 years old.
Right.
And it's full of action. Every chapter's a cliffhanger. People tell me they read book one in like one or two sittings.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So when I wrote it, I wanted it to be fast and fun and for kids, but it actually became a bestseller over the summer for adults.
Oh, wow.
Where we were doing a promotion, my publisher and I, and we hit number 134 on all of Kindle.
Wow.
And so they decided, well, let's put book one and two together. Uh-huh. And that's the entire series. I wasn't planning on doing a book three, but I have a lot of people asking now, so I might.
Really?
Because there's a good idea for a book three. But we put it together and we sold it, and we're putting it out at Barnes & Noble. Oh, so I just had a signing this weekend in Santa Monica.
Yes, I heard. And so that was at Barnes & Noble on 3rd Street there, the promenade. That's
pretty, that was a big deal for me.
Yeah, it's a big deal. You know, I mean, it's a great location.
And we did well. So
really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Very cool. So now, so let me ask you this, because I always wondered. I mean, they make books for like young adults, like The Hunger Games, for example, that Divergence, whatever, that new series.
Yeah. Very popular
series. That other series. What makes it a young adult book? I mean, how is it different from an adult book?
Well, for me, young adult meant that it was going to be more limited in the amount of graphic violence that was shown. While there's, violent themes being zombies, you can't really avoid that. We avoid bad language. There's no sexual or adult situations in the book, other than, of course, the adult situation of how kids would deal with the zombie apocalypse or teens.
Right. Know.
When I write horror fiction for adults, like Undead LA, it has a more intense angle to it than you would give to kids.
You'll use like four-letter words and all that stuff, right?
We use more colorful language than I would use.
Yeah, the way people talk.
But a lot of people don't realize that Zombie Attack was a young adult book or is a young adult book and series, and so they pick it up and they're like, this is great.
Yeah, that's a great book. You know, if they like zombies, who cares, you know? And just like Harry Potter, you know, I mean, that was so many adults that have read that and love it.
I read it and I loved the series. I picked it up on a whim thinking, why are kids so into this book?
Yeah. Huh?
And I really enjoyed it. And I kind of had that in mind when I was writing Zombie Attack, like keeping it on that level so that it have a broader audience and more people could enjoy it. Right. So I tell people it's for kids 10 and up.
I see. And usually the characters are younger as well, right?
Right. The main character, 16. Exactly. He takes care of a 15-year-old comic book geek who doesn't know how to take care of himself. He falls in love and with a child celebrity star he runs into. You know, it's fun.
Yeah.
It's meant to be a lot of fun and a wild adventure.
Sounds like it.
Yeah. I mean, how do you build something like this in your mind? I mean, does it like develop over time, or do you start from the beginning and then the story develops as you write it?
You know, I saw a meme on Facebook the other day, and it said, if you want to understand the inside of a writer's mind, imagine a browser on your computer with 38 tabs open and running at all times. And that's kind of what it is that stories are just going and going at all times. In fact, more than one series and different ideas are always – I think a lot of writers, we just keep notes on what we'd like to work on and then block out time for the things you're supposed to be working on.
Right. And I'm fascinated by writing because sometimes, I guess there's different styles of writing. Some authors already know how the story is going to turn out, how it's going to end. But some of them sort of like go with the story and see where it goes. How is it with you? Do you have the complete story in your head before you sit down and write it?
Usually I know the idea, a blueprint for it, and kind of the end.
Right.
With Zombie Attack, it was funny because I always plot out. Mm. And then I write off the plot. And in both books, book one and two, the plot changed. The characters kind of took a life of their own. And so the storyline changed a little bit. And there were scenes that I was hoping to write that got removed and scenes that I didn't expect to write that, oh, this would be a good idea. Let's do this.
Wow.
So I do think it develops. It's a work in progress.
Right. Now, about publishing, that's interesting as well. What was the process for you in finding a publisher?
Oh, I'm really glad you asked that because of my previous history and my many failed attempts to get my bad first novel that shall remain unnamed out and being told no, rightfully, by many people, I was kind of jaded. Yeah. So I said, I'm not going to go through all that again. Amazon has presented us the tools. Anybody that wants to do something can do it. I talked to a friend who had an editor. I hired them. They cleaned up my manuscript for me. I got an image in Photoshop, just made my own book cover.
Wow.
And I had another book that I had written right after it about zombies.
Really?
That was for adults called The Rising Dead, and I'd done the same thing. I put them on Amazon, and I used Twitter and Facebook to promote them. And both books got in the top 100 of their category.
Wow.
And after that, my publisher reached out to me and said, well, you're doing well. We think we can help you do even better. do you want to sign on with us?
Oh, wow.
So I tell people, don't wait for other people to do it. Don't wait for other people to promote you. Don't, I mean, it's good to ask. Right. Always ask if you can get a publisher. But I'm not the type of person that expects other people to do it for me.
So right.
I'm more the type of person that just goes out and makes it. So.
Well, that's good. I mean, it never falls in your lap, you know, unless you're extremely lucky and it's rare.
Yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But,
or related to someone.
Right.
You gotta be really,
yeah, there you go.
Deeply talented and related.
Yeah. So this is cool. When was the book published? Or let's say the first one.
I started this whole process. Like I said, I was frustrated after Humans versus Zombies came out. And, you know, I grew up here in L.A., so I've always been around Hollywood. You know, and for those of us that grew up in L.A., you just kind of get sick of it after a while. And you see it all. You see everything, right?
Yeah.
And I said, you know, I just want to write something for myself. I don't care if 10 people read it, but it's going to be mine.
Right.
So I think that was 2012.
And that's artistic thinking, you know? Just like a painter, you know? You don't paint thinking, are people going to buy this? It's just that's what comes out of you, right?
Right.
And because that's what you want to do.
Right.
And I think that's usually like the best results you get, you know, because
the results have been really good for me because, like I said, I just took this risk all on my own in 2012. And here in 2015, I have a book in Barnes & Noble.
Wow.
So yeah. It's not typical results for people, but, you know, and I got to say, it doesn't just happen in a bubble. You know, like I owe a great deal, I think, to friends and family, but especially to my wife. Mm. Who stood by me while I said, you know, I'm going to write stuff.
Right.
And the next thing you know, she's like, okay, we'll see how yeah. you do. And, you know, now she says, yeah, absolutely. You've had a movie and 6 books come out. So I think...
Yeah, you've proved yourself.
You're onto something.
I yeah. think you have something going here. Maybe we should stick with it and see how it turns out. So.
Do you have like a specific process you use for when you sit down and write?
You know what's funny is I read this book called On Writing by Stephen King, and I've talked to a lot of authors that are published authors that said the same thing. Before that, I didn't really have a system. I took a lot from that book, and it was like almost immediately after I read that book, I was like, aha, the light bulb went off. This is how you write a book. And it kind of fell together. So for me now, everyone has their own system. Mine involves, you know, getting up and clearing my mind and giving myself the ability. You have to remove the phone and everything, you know, and slot out a regular time that you write at and try to stick with it. It's kind of important. So
right.
I'd say there's a little bit of a system that involves, you know, tea and a hot shower or bath or something, you know.
Right. So now, so for people that want to know, when you are, so, and you talked about Amazon and stuff. Did you start with a Kindle and then when the publisher came to you, you went into print?
Yeah.
Is that how it worked?
Yeah. And the publisher put me into print on demand. So right. A lot of publishers out there, people don't realize there's a lot of small presses now that'll work with you. And because Amazon also has this print division called CreateSpace, they just take your work and they put it out.
Right.
So Amazon gets their cut and then your publisher will take their cut and then you get yours. But a lot of people don't know how to promote their own work or they don't have the ability to do it.
Right.
And so hopefully the strength of the publisher will carry them.
Right.
So.
Yeah. So that's the way you got to do it. But I think Amazon is a great place to really get known. And that's what I like about the Kindle is that you get books that are not even in print, you know.
Right.
So,
yeah.
So sometimes it's beneficial to have a Kindle just because some books are great, you know.
80% of book sales right now are on Amazon or on Kindle or some electronic format.
Really?
Most people aren't buying the big paperback or hardcover books as much as they're buying... Like,
well, because they took away our bookstores, you know? I mean,
but it's not just that. Like, this book here, like a normal book could be $12 to $17. The new Stephen King book, $17, $18, right? So people can't
Amazon. I mean, the full price is $30.
Right, to get the big books, right?
Right.
But say, Zombie Attack right now is $5.99 on Kindle. In fact, Zombie Attack 2 is on sale all week for $2.99.
Right, so, right.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, so you're talking about the Kindle prices.
Yeah, these are Kindle prices. Like, because so much more affordable. And I read it on my phone. I have a Kindle and I never even charge it. I just read it all on my phone now.
Really?
Right, because there's a Kindle app that you could actually use on your iPhone, your iPad.
Yeah, you can use them on all the tablets.
Yeah, I have all those devices. I read books on my phone too.
Yeah.
You just flip with your finger. I read them faster than I read normal books.
Yeah.
So. Really? Wow. I still love printed books more, but I do have a Kindle, and sometimes I do read it, you know, so.
It makes you wonder if printed books are going to be, like, a thing for rich people in the future, and right. the rest of us will all have, like,
you know. Yeah. We're talking to Devin Saliani, and you guys can go and check out his website. Go ahead and spell your name.
It's DevanSagliani.
Sounds good.
So you can go to devansaliani.com.
Okay. And yeah, and I'm sure if they Google you and stuff, they'll find a lot of your stuff as well. There's links to Facebook and Twitter. So the books you, the book you signed is the new one that contains both books?
Right.
Okay.
Like I said, it became popular over the summer. And then after that, book two is just now starting to take off more, which is why they're doing their promotion this week. So it's on the Horror Writers Association's recommended reading list. I'm hoping to get in the Bram Stoker Awards.
Oh, wow.
So I'll find out whether or not I made the preliminary ballot next week.
Yeah.
So
cool.
Very cool.
But BookieMonster.com named it one of the best books of 2014. And I took a lot of pride in that. That was great.
I'm sure.
That's really cool.
Wow. That's very flattering. How long does it take to write a book like this?
Funny, the first one took me, I think, 2 months, 3 months max.
Really?
But book two is twice as large.
Yeah.
And I swear it took me 6-7 months of just hand-wringing and writing and rewriting.
Wow. So it's cool when it finally comes out. It's like a baby, huh?
Right.
Finally comes out.
It's an exhausting process.
Yeah.
I've talked to other writers who said the same thing. When I'm done, I feel wiped out once I realize it's done. For a week or more, you just feel just drained.
Drained, huh?
You know?
How do you decide when a book is done? Like, okay, I've written everything. It all sounds great. Done.
That's a good question because there were times I've written stuff that I didn't know it was done. And then I looked at it and I was rereading it and I thought, this is done.
Yeah.
Was going to tack on this big extra section that would probably slow it down and not add that much. I think this is done. And then you check the word count. And I had a really good friend tell me many, many years ago that professional writers always know when it's done because they know when it's due. It's done
really?
When the deadline is due because a professional writer will tinker with it. For, you know, you put it in a drawer and you pull it out. And, oh, it's not good enough yet. You know, that self-doubt that creeps into everyone. So
yeah,
it's done when it's due.
Yeah, I know. And I wanted to ask you about this because some authors, from what I understand, like Tom Clancy, for example, right? He doesn't actually write the books. I think it's more like a crew of people, a team, and he sort of like oversees it. Is that the way it works? Do you know?
I'm unfamiliar with that. I write everything on my own.
And right.
And nobody else contributes to it other than, say, my editor helping me with notes. She's fantastic. So
right.
I don't even use really beta readers because I consider myself now to be a professional, and I just assume that you know, you'll see sometimes people go, well, what do you think I should do with this or that? And I think I always want to answer in a kind way, not trying to be mean. I think you should make your own choices as an author and stand by your decisions.
Yeah.
So.
Very interesting stuff. So from what I understand, you're married. You said you're married. Do you have any children?
Not yet.
We
have a fur baby. I have a 9-month-old Jack Russell Terrier puppy that's driving me crazy.
Really?
I love her to death. Oh, my God. She's driving me crazy.
Wow, cool.
What's her name?
Her name is Lollipop, and she's quite famous in Santa Monica dog parks.
Really?
And on my friend's Instagram account. No, she's great. I love her to death, but that high energy of Jack Russell, and she's pure.
Yeah.
She's half wire coat, half smooth coat.
Uh-huh.
And she's just... It's just go all day.
Wow.
And can be the sweetest, most loving puppy. And she can just drive me nuts, too. When she wants to play, it's her time.
Yeah.
And trying to set rules and boundaries with an animal.
Not easy.
Can be complicated. So.
Wow, very cool. So did you grow up in L.A. here?
Yeah, I'm from Los Angeles.
You're
I was actually
here.
Born in South Bay and raised around L.A. I graduated from UCLA.
Oh, wow.
And I've been here. I've gone other places, but never really stayed. In the 90s, I tried to make a short jump for a period to Seattle.
Uh-huh.
And I went the worst time ever. I had visited in summer, and it was gorgeous.
Uh-huh.
And I went back in winter, and it rained and snowed.
Ugh.
The bridge sank. It rained so much. And I went, you know what? It's fun to visit.
Right.
I'm not going to stay.
I know. And that's what people say, because I love rain. I could use rain. And sometimes I'm like, I could live with rain all the time, but people are saying, no, you can't. You know, it's too much. It's too much what they get in Seattle. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So this is cool. Not many people are from L.A., you know, so
I know.
You're qualified.
My wife is from L.A. as well.
Yeah.
So I think that's part of why we relate to each other.
Uh-huh.
You always meet these people that are wonderful people that will tell you how much they hate L.A. And you're like,
like why?
Or how fake people in L.A. are. And I go, you know, it's funny because the people I was raised with and still know
are not like that, right?
They don't seem fake and flaky. We always say, if your nickname was Hollywood before you came here, maybe you have a higher chance of being one of these people that people see as flaky.
Right. Absolutely. You know, I mean, we've got 3.8 million people in this town.
We can't all be bad,
you know?
Right.
There's got to be...
Strength in numbers.
Yeah, exactly.
And if it's so awful, why does everyone keep moving here?
Exactly. The whole world moves here.
They love it.
Yeah.
I believe it's from the interview. They hate us because they ain't us.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not from here and I love it. So.
Yeah. There you go. I mean, there's so many opportunities here.
But the holidays are a fantastic time because everyone goes home to where they're from.
Yes.
You can get anywhere in 5 minutes. It's like this morning. You can get anywhere in 5 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
And when they come back, they're reminded of why they left wherever they lived and why they like L.A. So everyone's in a good mood for like a month.
Yeah.
And then
it sets back
the traffic
in, right.
And the madness and all the crazy people. And you go, oh, yeah, I hate it here. You know, so hip to say you don't like L.A., but I love L.A.
I do, too. I can't stand people that say they don't like it. Get out.
Well, that's why I wanted to make something. See, this was set in California, Zombie Attack.
That's what I was just going to ask.
The Rising Dead was set in Vegas.
Oh, really?
My other book was set in Vegas.
Uh-huh.
It was the idea, if the zombie apocalypse happens in Vegas, does it stay in Vegas?
Right.
And I said, well, you have to read the book to find out.
That's funny.
But then I wanted to shout out love to my city because I love L.A.
Okay.
And I love everything about it here. And so I wrote these 6 interconnecting stories so that the city of L.A. itself is the main character of Undead L.A.
Wow.
So the
like
one
Paris,
story is,
I Love You, or New York, I Love You, those movies.
Right. And so the stories loosely interconnect. Characters kind of come in and out, but they're all different. Mm-hmm. One is a Raymond Chandler, Michael Conley-esque detective story about a detective from LAPD during the police, during the apocalypse. Another one is about kids called Camp Snoopy or Camp Zombie, of where they're stuck here. Mm-hmm. Another one is about Venice, because I'm a huge Venice person.
Uh-huh.
I love West L.A.
Right.
And I love Venice.
That's
Beach,
Venice though. Beach, California.
That's
not
right.
Venice, Italy.
No.
Okay.
So the stories, in a lot of ways, they praise L.A. and they show a lot about Los Angeles. So.
Yeah.
Now, are any of these being turned into movies?
Not at this time. So I'm still open to it, but I got to tell you, after what happened last time,
right.
I'm going to be a little more cautious about what I do and don't take. You know, when you're new at this and opportunities come, you grab them
right.
because you want everything. But after you've been through the ringer a couple times, you start being a little more selective. So I think when it comes to Zombie Attack is really my big book right now. And I think that series is so important to me that I would want a lot of say in what happens.
Yeah.
So. My best friend makes movies. They just made Divergent and Insurgent. Or
I am
those
totally
are.
Open to offers at this time.
There you go. Why would you
from
say
legitimate
no?
Legitimate, you know? People.
Yeah. There you go.
I was going to tell you as well. It's funny you mentioned the type of propaganda against marijuana. One of the movies, Reefer Madness, I don't know if people know this, but New Line Cinema was founded because the creator of the company was a copyright lawyer, and he discovered that the copyright was up on that. And so he took it out and he put it out, and this led to, you know, down the line having enough money to create Nightmare on Elm Street.
Wow.
So it's funny the connections that we don't always see in the world that we live in. I'm interviewing right now a guy named Tommy Hudson.
Uh-huh.
I write a column on a website called The Escapist.
Okay.
And they gave me a horror column, and I get to talk to different people in the horror community about their lives and about whatever interests me inside of horror. And so Tommy Hudson wrote and produced or directed the documentary behind Nightmare on Elm Street, The Legacy, called Never Sleep Again, The Elm Street Legacy. Wow. And he just put out a book about it.
Uh-huh.
And so I was interviewing him, and in the process of doing my research, I discovered that there was this connection where the propaganda against marijuana, originally that film was very serious, and then as time went by, it became kind of a spoof because it's so ridiculous.
Right.
Wow. And it was that that led to Nightmare on Elm Street even being possible, or Freddy Krueger become a cultural icon. So you never know where horror is going to blend in.
That's true. Well, we are out of time. Why don't you go ahead and promote whatever's upcoming for you? Are you going to be signing more?
Yeah, Barnes & Noble has asked me to do more signings because the signing went well, but I don't have dates yet.
So right, so just check out the website. Yeah. Give out the website again.
So the website is devansagliani.com. That's DevanSagliani.com.
Sounds good. And you can find all the books there and everything.
And all my social media accounts are listed, and you can even contact me.
So. Awesome.
Yeah, and there's a wealth of information on here, a lot of stuff. So this is cool. Devan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you guys for having me.
You're a lot of fun, and we wish you all the best. I'm inspired by your persistence and everything, you know, and really going after what you want and being successful at it, you know.
Thank
so
you.
Very inspiring. And you're leaving us a signed book, an autographed book.
How
and
could
we
I not?
Appreciate it. All right, everybody. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Jen.
Thank you,
as
Sam.
Always, and we'll see you tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, right here on LA Talk Radio.